You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and then you have the facts of life. But what if you just take the good away? Then you have absolute Batman. Everybody, welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd. Wow, that cryptic intro sort of sends the opposite message that I thought it was going to. My name is Drew, and I am here to talk to you about DC's new Absolute run. And I cannot do it without an old man on a motorcycle. Miles, how are you, my friend?
Who?
Miles! Mouse. I don't know what's going on with me tonight. I know.
That Mouse actually threw me back, because there was a neighbor kid at my grandfather's house who pronounced my name exactly like that, like so that sounded like Mouse, and I was like, what just happened? Why am I time traveling right now?
Yeah.
How you doing, bud?
Man. I'm okay. How are you doing?
Living and breathing.
That's the idea.
that's the idea. I was pretty excited when you brought the idea of doing the absolute stuff, because it is something that I have not made time for. And like Ultimate Spider-Man, I kind of looked at it with squinted eyes and I'm like, we're doing this now?
Well, because the designs are weird, and like the whole log line of the franchise is,
no money, no mansion.
Yeah, and this is just for all of the things, because, as again, we're going to be covering multiple absolutes this month, where you have, suddenly Batman's not rich, and Wonder Woman's not from here, and Superman doesn't land in the Kent farm, and all this stuff, so they're going to be totally badass, dark characters now, right? Well, ironically... No, it's kind of because that is the thing that I was worried about, because we are so used to like edgy, edgy, dark versions of characters. Like, I mean, heck, we've read a lot of Dark Knight's Metal, which is also written by Scott Snyder, the guy who wrote this book. And
yeah, and. That, and like, because you see this kind of thicker looking Batman with the Fat Bat logo, which is a logo that I will forever hate, it's evocative of like, okay, we're gonna get kind of a Frank Miller style Batman here, and even though a lot of the marketing had said no, this whole thing is about taking away all of these things, but the core of the character remains the same. And frankly, I just didn't trust that they would do that.
Yeah, same.
And so before reading this, you know, I read the Absolute Power miniseries that kind of kickstarts where this goes. And then you read some of All In.
Oh, you're right.
All In, which I believe was a free Comic Book Day special.
Well, I read a bunch of All In stuff. So like
there's a bunch of All In tiered stuff for sure. The All In special that specifically leads into this is one that has like the whole bit of Darkseid and the Spectre merging and then getting separated, and then them basically explaining this universe. And that's the most important part of that thing. It's not a particularly good special at all. Reference the fact that he didn't finish it because it's not really fun to read.
No, it's not great. I like get to the point is what I wanted it to be.
And but so the idea is that, and this is going to come up, I guess, this coming holiday season with Absolute Evil, I think is what's called. Basically, this is a universe that's been kind of forged by Darkseid and creates this version of Earth that, while similar, because you can't just get rid of everything, it's been kind of fashioned so that things like hope and stuff are kind of like toned down and kind of villainy, very, very much similar to the way the Marvel Ultimate Universe is now, where like kind of the bad guys run things to some degree.
Yeah. Which, and it's weird that both of these things came out around the same time and had similar ideas, but you know, there's no such thing as an original idea.
Well, that, and like, I mean, the thing is, I don't mind because they do it very, very differently. Well, no, they don't, because the Maker pops in this universe, forges it in his own image. Darkseid does the same thing. I think it's a little different that we've seen so far with this one, in that the Maker, the Darkseid isn't just like a syndicate that is kind of has his finger in every single pie the way the Maker is in the Marvel one. I know he's a presence on Earth, but but that doesn't matter, because this story gives us a brand new Gotham, brand new Batman, and a brand new origin for Batman that is almost wholly different from what we are used to. And typically when you get this kind of stuff, we're switching to Elseworlds mode, what if Batman was a pirate? Or what if Batman's origin happened in, you know, revolutionary France? Or if he took on, if he was active during the Victorian era and was taking on Jack the Ripper. This is a contemporary Batman. This is not, let's imagine him brand new as if it was today. It is, no, let's take out some of these core tenets that have been part of the Batman universe for almost 100 years. And let's see if we can still keep the core of that character alive. And I gotta say, it's a pretty interesting experiment.
I agree. And especially because the big thing about Batman, the one big change that is made here, is that he is not wealthy. He is the son of a teacher and a civil servant. And he,
although they don't explain exactly where he gets some of this stuff, and I was like, okay, we're just gonna avoid some of this, aren't we?
Well, no, he steals it. That's the answer.
He steals it, but some of it's like, oh no, I made this, and this, and I'm like, okay.
Well, so we'll talk about his new origin, because it is one of the most fascinating things about this character. But,
and for once, I don't mind seeing the origin.
I know. Oh, this is 6 issues of origin story, baby. It's, I know, 6 issues of origin.
Well, because they do kind of the Arrow approach, where you're in the current time, and then for a couple panels or parallel to the current panels, you are getting this flashback to the zoo, which is the title of the first 6 issues.
Yes. So, in the present day, you have a young Bruce Wayne. He's only in he's in his 20s. He's starting out. He's doing the early Batman stuff. And you find out that despite the fact that he doesn't come from money, he has spent time basically honing his craft. He still has his genius level intellect. He gets a scholarship to college. He was apparently a football star that could have gone pro, but fakes an injury in order to continue doing what his plan is, which is such a wild...
I love it so much. Like, the fact that... And we gotta say, most of these 6 issues are not narrated by Bruce, even though we do get insights into his brain. They're narrated by Alfred.
Yeah. So, Alfred... We'll take a little side note to Alfred. I don't always love the contemporary version of Alfred as a former SAS agent super spy that ends up becoming the butler for the Waynes at his father's behest and blah, 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 blah. But obviously this is a version of Alfred who never stopped being a super spy secret agent. And between that and his freaking like Logan style haircut, looking like Alfred and Logan crossed together, and being kind of antagonistic towards Bruce. I don't know. I got into it. I liked it a lot.
I was super into this version as well. Because the thing is like, I know sometimes I sound a little flippant when people are talking about how great of a Batman writer Scott Snyder is, because I don't love some of the stuff he did in his initial run. Like, The Court of Owls is an all-timer story. We'll not argue against that.
For sure.
I am iffy on Death of the Family, and I was not a big Zero Year fan. Loved Super Heavy, loved Bloom, loved that stuff, and loved and liked Endgame. It was
Endgame. Endgame, you could tell he was kind of checking out.
He was certainly writing something to make an ending.
Yeah. Super Heavy was just interesting because it was something that has never been done before. With
I thought it was good. I thought it was very cool.
It surprised me in a lot of ways. And Bloom as a character was really interesting and creepy.
Loved Bloom.
Yeah, Capullo art for Bloom is just something special.
Incredible. So, I mean, it's just that, like, a lot of people act like he came out the bat and was like, came out the gate and was like, oh, this is the best Batman writer of all time. And I certainly think he's written some of the best Batman stories, but I think he's a largely inconsistent writer when compared to my personal favorite Batman writer of all time, Grant Morrison.
But who isn't inconsistent when compared to Grant Morrison? Well, right, right. Let's be real about that.
Yeah.
But
with this story, he absolutely puts on display that he fundamentally understands Batman, the spirit of Batman, and what truly makes Batman tick, so that this does not end up being the very thing we were worried about.
Yeah, because this is an edgy Batman in the way that edgy Batman stories are always edgy. But this is still a Batman that does his best not to kill people, despite the fact that he is stabbing people with knives.
And gouges Black Mask in the eyes.
Gouges Black
Mask. Which I was like, I thought he killed him.
Cut the dude's hand off. Like, this is a Batman that is brutal, but he's a Batman that's...
It's brutal, but not grimdark. That's the weird thing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of grim stuff happening in here when we talk about the party animals as a concept, but
yeah, which is really reminiscent of the Joker War, which I didn't wholly appreciate sometimes, the Tom King era, but there's still within this kind of dark story, these great beacons of hope. We get these awesome bits of his childhood. And then we get like probably the still paragon, the shining light in Martha Wayne, who is still alive.
Who did not die, to quote Charles Dickens.
I love this choice so much.
Yeah, so another big change in this is that Jim Gordon is currently mayor of Gotham City. He's in the middle of an election campaign that he is losing.
Very badly.
And Martha has been a civil servant, and I don't exactly remember what she did. What she was doing, but by the end of the story, she is now running as Jim Gordon's deputy mayor, which is just such an interesting change. But you've got Martha Wayne in Bruce's life as this sort of paragon, this protector and this guiding light. But this is a Bruce Wayne that grew up on the streets of Gotham. He grew up around Crime Alley. And he's got a little cadre of friends, including the Killer Croc, Waylon Jones, Harvey Dent, who is now working for the DA's office. So he's making something of himself. Edward Nigma, you know, he's made an AI called the Riddler, and his buddy Oswald Cobblepot, who Oz, they call him,
Ozzy.
Maybe he's into something that he's not supposed to be into, but at the end of the day, they still all make time to make it to their poker game, which is just...
I love this so much, and when I... On paper, if you had told me that, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna hate this.
Yeah, because again, on paper, it sounds like it sucks, but it doesn't. It's
so good, because, and they also leave a spot for Selena.
Yes, because Selena was also part of their group as kids, but she has... No one's seen her in a while, and we don't really know where she's been.
And that's a choice that I love. It's not that these guys are friends. They have been friends since they were children. They would spend the night at Bruce's house. And I love the bit where Edward's like, well, you know, why don't Selena and Bruce share a sleeping bag? Then we can have room. We know they like each other.
but and that's the thing when we talk about the zoo, because we need to talk about the zoo itself. because it's not just Bruce Wayne and his parents in a dark alley in the middle of the night coming home from a movie. It is an event that happens in broad daylight during a school field trip to the zoo. A school field trip to the zoo that is attended not only by Bruce, but all of his friends. Wayland,
oh, because
Harvey,
he won. He won the science contest.
He won the science contest designing a bridge based off of bat wings. Like, that is something that's so awesome about this as well, is that he is coached about bats, and he finds that bats aren't scary. They're awesome because they're survivors and they're adaptable, and they always find a way to adapt themselves to their situation. And it was in that's like, that is the core of Batman right there. That's Batman and his planning. So you've got all of Bruce's friends as a kid there at the zoo when this happens. And then you've got the teacher of the class. Oh, yeah, when he was younger, he wanted to be a surgeon. But no, he became a teacher. Thomas Wayne is his teacher in school, and you get these awesome moments between, because that's another thing about Bruce and his parents, is that because they were, you know, super rich or whatever, there's often times where they are depicted as being a little distant because, you know, like a succession kind of storytelling thing. But in here you have two parents that are loving and caring to their son. And when what happens at the zoo happens, and they race, of course, of all places, into the bat sanctuary at the zoo, and Thomas locks them in, and he says the phrase, "No matter what you hear, don't open this door." And when you hear that echoed back later on when Batman says it to somebody else, it's just like, man, Scott Snyder, you are cooking here, dog.
he really is, because I mean, you will not find someone who is more tired of having to sit through the Batman origin than me. It is a common conversation between Drew and I whenever new Batman media is coming out or being discussed. And the fact that they are able to completely refresh it in a way that feels both new, unique, and effective is insane. But because for the first time we kind of deal with a fresh piece of clay with Bruce Wayne, you know, we're not flashing back to a kid that, you know, had everything and then had it taken away from him, but he comes off as cold. Like, and they even call him, you know, I think someone says, oh, yeah, you're a crime alley kid through and through. And it's a very different Bruce. And so when you remove certain elements, you get new ones. And that's the cool thing that Snyder understood, is just because you take something away doesn't mean something new doesn't come up, you know? And I think that it's such a brilliant forward-thinking way of approaching a project like this, because, you know, especially when you deal with like something like Batman, I would say even more than Spider-Man, because you've had like Spider-Verse and we've had billions of different kind of different ideations on Peter and his ilk. With Batman, we're pretty set in stone for the last 80 years.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, we know who Batman is, so we can just move on from this. Oh, you're going to make me sit through this again? I feel like Scott Snyder expected that. And so he was like, yeah, I'm gonna spend six issues, half a year, giving you the origin of this Batman, and it is not what you expect.
And that he still has all the Batman stuff of, he's got the genius intellect. He went to school. He knows what he's doing. And what does he do? He starts working construction.
Yep.
And as part of his construction projects, he's part of building all of these big buildings in Gotham City.
And then helps him set up some safe houses.
And then he works for the water treatment section of Gotham. Oh, and now all of a sudden he knows all about the sewer systems in Gotham and all of this other stuff, and gets and he knows specifically where the rich people, and this is where Alfred really finds him, and it's that yeah, oh, the rich people built these super tall buildings, but they never had any intention of filling every floor. So all of these floors up at the top of the building are just empty because they didn't have the money to put anything in them, and they just wanted to make a tall building. And that's
when he blows one of those up to make it look like a bat, I cheered. I really did.
The way that this dude sticks to the branding in issue 6, when what happens, and it's in a big bat symbol, it's like, man.
Oh, when he gets so mad when he realizes it's in the shape of a bat, he's like, I think he's just like, that son of a bitch. No, it says in all caps, I hate this man, or something like that. Like, he's so annoyed. And I'm like, no, it's called staying committed to the bit.
but then he says on the next page, I love this man.
Oh, yeah. The back and forth of Alfred, I think, is the most interesting part of this story, because he's not just this SAS. He works for somebody. He is some sort of kind of cloak and dagger, like the blackest of black ops type of guy. And he is supposed to be keeping an eye on the party animals. And I feel like, you know, that's going to be, you know, probably pay off much, much later. Whoever he's supposed to work for. But him kind of coming to terms of like, I like this kid. I like what he's trying to do. He's not going to make it. And every single turn is there Bruce proving him wrong or pissing him off and being like, okay, this is what's going to happen now. Now he's finally going to learn his lesson. And it's like, nope, Bruce thought of that. And it's like, okay, so we still get some of this planning for everything. Like all these core things. I think what's also so cool and makes this even more refreshing is, despite the fact that I hate the fat bat suit, I will never like a fat bat, like bat symbol. I just won't. I think it's ugly as sin. But the fact that they kind of rethought, okay, well, what's Batman's suit set like? And they invented kind of, they took some ideas that have existed before, but invented a whole new way for Batman to operate with his suit that is so different from the current Batman and what he does.
He calls it the bat thumb.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the big cape. He's got some cowly kind of stuff. But
it's a big ass cape.
Well, it's big. But it kind of focuses more around his arms in the way that a bat's wings are like a hand that has the long fingers weapon coming out.
Yeah.
So he's got these two like metal prod things. I don't even know what you call them, but they're slightly prehensile, and he can like clasp them in, and he uses that to climb around the city, and he's hitting dudes with them in fights, and it's awesome.
You know, he also has these spikes that come out when guys are diving on him. He kind of does this move that you'd see in a fighting game where he kind of like flexes and then spikes come out. And then like additionally, the bat ears have a function, you know.
Yeah, he pulls them out and they're knives and he stabs.
They're knives, but I think they also have some other additional purpose. But it's very cool to see this take on Batman, because you thought, oh, because this sounded so similar to this Darren Aronofsky, Frank Miller pitch of a Batman Year One story prior to Batman Begins that I absolutely hated. Like, oh yeah, Batman's going to be a homeless garage mechanic or something. And I'm like, what? And this is not that.
No.
And I think it is so interesting and such a fresh idea that, and I like that even that like we're taking these ideas of the Rogues Gallery, and I kind of hope they keep them just as like Bruce's buddies. Maybe they have some proclivities to, you know, do other things, but like his buddy Waylon Croc owns a gym. Very Rocky style. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, because, I don't think we mentioned Killer Croc.
Well, I mentioned him because he's...
Oh, did you? Okay.
I called him the Killer Croc because... but he's just a guy that likes reptiles and wants to to put them in the gym or something. I don't exactly...
Yeah, well, I think he wants to have like a reptile sanctuary or something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's another thing about it is that the zoo is closing. And so part of the backstory of all of this is what's going to happen to all the animals. But that hasn't really been brought up a lot since then. But yeah, you've got Waylon who's running the gym. You've got Harvey who's already a DA.
DA.
And so he's he's working in it, but he's, of course, you know, not everything in the DA's office is up to snuff. Not everybody at the DA's office is super clean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Eddie Nigma, who is just a super smart technological genius, and so he's helping Bruce with a bunch of stuff, and I can't remember if he reveals to them that he's Batman or not. Does he? I don't remember if he does or not.
He reveals himself to Harvey, who's pissed, and then mentions that so-and-so's pissed, and then A is like, oh yeah, I figured out 6 weeks ago.
Oh, that's right. That's what it is. That's what it is. But yeah, Ozzy is having gone towards more of the underworld side of things, where we're getting the idea of, is the only one that seems kind of on the outs with anybody. But even then, he still shows up for poker with Harvey. So it's an interesting turn on it. I feel like we should probably talk about the party animals, because this is this is the thing that throughout the entirety of the first five and a half of these books, you don't really know what's going on with this whole thing.
You know that they are kind of led by Black Mask to a degree, who was a character that just has had such a big upence in the last 25 years. Like he for a while, he was kind of like, yeah, he's just a kind of a B tier villain. And then for whatever reason, kind of around the time they did the Bruce Wayne murder arc, like they just got to be in their bonnet by making him a big deal.
I mean, he's the crime boss that you can get away with in a world where you can't rely on Two-Face to be your crime boss all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's really the thing. Like, you've got, Batman's always had like the kooky crimes and the serial killers and stuff like that with your like Mr. Freezes and your Jokers and all of this stuff. But he's also got a lot of just like mafia guys. And Two-Face is usually one of them. Black Mask obviously is, the Falcones and all of the classic Gotham, you know, criminal underworld things. The Penguin slots into a lot of that as well. But yeah, in this, the party animals are all wearing masks, and they're just doing just random, seemingly senseless violence. And nobody can really figure out why. Until Batman kicks the crap out of one of them and takes the mask and gets Eddie to figure it out. And as it turns out, because of the world that they live in, Black Mask has this idea of, hey, we're all broke. I grew up on a pig farm killing pigs.
He claims
we will never be what they are. So why don't we just do whatever we can to get as many of their scraps as possible? And through his connections to whatever this secret underground organization is and a cryptocurrency that is untraceable and highly whatever, that I forget the name of the cryptocurrency, should have written it down. Basically, anybody wearing one of these masks, they look out and they see a dollar amount of what would happen if you killed that person or destroyed that thing. And that is what's going on, is that people with this weird set of anonymity, because they are wearing these masks and nobody can identify who they are just going crazy, killing people to get a quick buck, because some of the people that they kill are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, like they can make money faster doing this with seemingly little repercussion, because there's just so much of it happening that the police can't keep up. And that's the one thing that's sort of like, I don't know how much I like that, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I think the party animals are kind of the flimsiest part, because again, it's very close to the Joker War. I do love the bit where kind of Bruce pulls the a Joker from the Dark Knight, and because at one point, and it's as told by Alfred, he predicted this, that Roman Sionis, the Black Mask, was going to reach out to Batman, and if he can make it to the meeting point, essentially, is going to offer him a deal. Like, hey, if you cut it out for just X time, I will give you X amount of money. And you can build this Batman idea to be whatever you want. Basically, I can give you the regular Batman, what's the word I'm looking for?
They use the phrase to build Batman into something that'll last.
Yeah, but to make him more of a traditional Batman,
$250 million is the thing.
What does Bruce do, Drew?
Well, Bruce ends that ends that issue saying, "I'll take it. It's a deal."
I was like,
"What?
What?
What? Are you kidding me?" But as we open up the next issue, and Bruce is driving around on the motorcycle that he stole from Alfred, which is something I will never get over how funny that is.
So good.
He's just kind of tempting them into breaking the pact that they have for this. And as he finally goes to the meeting place to meet with Black Mask, well, we should say the zoo itself got closed after the event happened. And in its place, a memorial light was installed.
Mm-hmm.
That they shine once a year for the memorial of the event that happened in the zoo. Well, this year they said they weren't going to light it in response to all of the stuff going on, that it was just a reminder of a darker time, and they're already in dark times, so they don't need to do that anymore. And of course, what does Bruce do? Well, he turns that sucker on, and as you see on top of it, there's $250 million in stacks of cash. And what's it in the shape of, Miles?
A bat.
A bat symbol. I love it. And that is the bat signal in the sky.
As the money burns.
As the money burns. Oh, God. It's so good. I love it.
And it's a moment where I'm like, I love this Bruce so much.
I love it. Because it's like, it's a Bruce Wayne. That, like, somehow, it's a Bruce Wayne that you like more because he didn't grow up with money. Like, he's not.
Well, there is that. This is a completely different kind of driven. This is someone who is, like, still has every advantage in terms of, like, he's honing his body. He's trained.
And like, Alfred. This dude is, as a big boy, he's
yeah, and then jacked. Alfred like lists like five different types of fighting styles he saw within one battle. You know, he knows vehicles, he knows his stuff, and I like that this is the first time in a long time where we see that. Oh yeah, we've always been told that Batman's a pretty much a genius level guy, which we always like. Oh, he's a detective. We don't actually get to see that at play a lot, and here, because he doesn't have the money, and we don't have to like pretend that like, oh, I gotta go through R&D and blah blah blah. And like have other characters kind of supply the toys. It's like, no, we get to see Bruce do this 100%. And because Bruce Wayne is kind of an anonymous figure, he is not the golden boy of Gotham.
But
he can do it.
But he's got friends. And that's the other thing. It's like he's not figuring a lot. He's figuring a lot of the stuff out on his own. But he knows when he's at his limits and needs help. And that's when he takes the mask to Eddie and all of this stuff.
And it's only six issues, so it's too soon to complain about this. But I will say I would like to get to know current Bruce a little bit more. We do have a couple of scenes like where he goes to see his mom, and when he actually does show up for the poker game. But I do want a little bit more of Bruce. Like everyone's so good at writing Batman, and I love it. Oh well, Bruce Wayne's his mask. I dislike that read so much. I want to see more of Bruce. And again, the writer that I love that somewhat understands that is Grant Morrison, and often does write stuff with Bruce. Or write scenes where like, yes, Dick, Damien, and Tim and I are going to watch a movie, and I'm making them watch Zorro. I don't care how much Damien complains. that stuff is... So I'm giving it some time because this is just establishing the universe. It's establishing this Batman, and... it's a very kinetic book. Something's constantly happening. So I'm going to give it, you know, a good amount of time. Because this is absolutely a book I'm going to keep up with. This book is freaking fire.
It's great. I'm so thrilled with this book. And it's like, I had only read 5 issues at once because I thought it was 5 issues and not 6. And then Miles is like, oh, you know, there's a 6 issue in this that we got to read. And I was like, oh, no. Not a 6 issue.
Not a 6 issue. I'm not going to lie. After I read the 6 issue, I was like, I might just read the 7th issue.
I almost started it, man. I almost started it. But it's really like, I'm honestly shocked that I like this as much as I do. I've read a lot of Batman books and I've read a lot of Batman origin stories, and something about this is just hitting in a way that I did not expect.
Yeah, and I wonder if it kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week, is there is this kind of idea that, like, hey man, be great if we could just read a story. You know? And I mean, I know a lot of arcs do begin a certain way so that you can just hop on. I'm not talking about that. It is kind of refreshing to, like, kind of just dive into a book and just be able to read it. And that's not a comment on ongoing series necessarily, but, like, I just feel like a lot of arcs recently have, and I love sitting with the characters, I love slice of life stuff, I love a little spinning of the wheels, but I feel like there has been a little bit of a directionlessness in some of the main books these days. Like, you know, they'll have stories because they have to. And I mean, I also have to redact last week because I kept saying that Chip Zdarsky was going to be the new Batman writer. And I mixed that up with Matt Fraction. Matt Fraction is the new Batman writer who was doing the new number one. Chip Zdarsky just finished his run.
Yeah. But again, everything about Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky that we said last week
still stands because they worked together on Sex Criminals. So, like, yeah, it's perfect.
Those two are bros, and it's like, man.
And Fraction kind of redefined Hawkeye, so it's like, yeah, well.
Oh, the Fraction Hawkeye was so good.
Yeah, it's super good. I love Fraction. He's a great writer. Him and Brubaker both.
I could have gone to the comic book shop that he worked at in Charlotte my entire life growing up and met him, and I just, of course, obviously.
Where do you work? Did. Is it Heroes?
Heroes aren't hard to find, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a good shop. It's a cool shop.
I've actually never been there.
Oh, dude. Next time you're home, you should go.
Yeah.
But there is something so refreshing about reading a story with a specific goal. Like, it's not worried about, like, it's establishing a universe, but it's not worried about, like, okay, well, did so-and-so read the last 75 issues because we gotta, you know, catch everyone up, but none of that. And that's really nice. But not only that, I've read a lot of Ultimate stories. I've read a lot of Elseworlds, a lot of What Ifs, a lot of Black Label. I've read variations of Batman. And I will give Scott Snyder his flowers here. I have never read a unique take on Batman's origin outside of the standard that has excited me. Like, despite the, I mean, and I'm not going to count, like, oh, well, Batman versus Dracula and the Elseworld stuff, or Batman finds out that's all. Look, I love The Doom That Came to Gotham. It's one of my favorite Elseworld stories. But I have never read an attempt to kind of revamp Batman in a way that has gotten me so excited, that has stayed so true to the nature of Batman and understands Batman at a fundamental level that, despite every change and how different it is, and this is a very different take, it's a very different story. There are so many times where I was like, huh? But, oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah.
Like, I can't say anything else, it's just, it's so good.
And I think that's probably where we should hang it up for the evening, because we're just going to keep saying it was so good, it's so good, it's so good. Because it is.
We didn't even get into the stuff Selena. Like,
we didn't get into the stuff
Selena. And then surprising you at the movie theater and then complaining how boring Zorro was.
But then also seeing that his mom is in the back watching the kids all watch the movie together. And it's like,
by the way, unsung hero of this book.
Oh.
Like, this, the bit where, like, the, okay, we do have to talk about, you were talking about the masks and how they put valuations on crimes and stuff. At this point in time, Martha Wayne has stepped up as deputy mayor, because the other one's been killed or shot or whatever.
They just backed out of the race.
Yeah, I can't remember.
They're choosing not to run alongside Jim.
And Martha Wayne is, like, all in. DC all in. and has this great stand where, like, hey, they're going to let her go. Even though she's worth $1 million, they're going to let the lady go and kill Jim Gordon. And Martha Wayne will not have it. And she has this great little speech, just as Bruce is, like, dismantling the servers so that everything shuts down. And the guy who was going to shoot Jim is like, wait, what's going on? The system's going up. I'm not going to get paid for this. She just walks up and clobbers him. And it is so good. Like, Martha Wayne kind of being the Leslie Tompkins of this thing, even though Leslie Tompkins is a character because she does give Bruce's rabies shot after he was attacked by the bats in the sanctuary.
Yeah.
Or not even attacked, but like they were all over him.
They were all over him. Honestly, it read to me like they were trying to protect him, which is just a little sugar on that moment, on that terrible moment where he lost his father.
I gotta give it to Scott Snyder, and I gotta look up the artist for this, because even though I was a little
Nick Dragotta.
I was a little hesitant about this artwork, I gotta be honest. And I'm still not a fan of this fat bat design. I think there was a way you could have done I get it, everyone's like, oh yeah, but it turns into an axe. I'm like, you could have easily made a bat shaped axe, and don't tell me you couldn't. But yeah, Nick Dragotta does, and then Frank Martin is on colors, do an incredible job to make this feel kind of like a weird combination of like Tim Sale and Frank Quitely and like a little bit of a little Jim Lee in there as well. But it's this weird hodgepodge of styles that like somehow work. And yeah. I really, like, when I first saw some of the artwork, I was like, oh, this is never going to work.
Because Black Mask is like super lithe and skinny and weird. And
also, did you clock that they use a Superman character during the scene where he's training?
Oh,
Bibbo Bogowski?
Is that who that was?
That's Bibbo. The guy that used to be like in the Superman trunks and the boxing gloves. That had a little dog named Crypto in the old Superman comics.
I did not clock it.
Yeah, that's Bibbo Bogowski.
I wondered why that name was so familiar. I just couldn't clock it, and I didn't look it up.
That was the true believer of Superman in the Death of Superman era. And a character that I have a weird fondness for because I love that era of comics. But I thought that was a cool little touch. But yeah, this book is incredible. I am so happy to be so wrong about this book.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
I mean, legit, this, if it stays the course, this could be an all-timer run for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not super thrilled that we're introducing a Joker so early into the mix.
Yeah, so apparently he's introduced, but he hasn't appeared yet. I think they said that he's coming this fall. So we still have, you know, because I think there's been 10 issues so far.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
I can just double check real quick. Yeah, there's 10 out right now.
Oh, I've lost Miles. Oh, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back. Unfortunately, Miles' power went out, so he's going to make a daring escape from this episode. So I'm just going to wrap this up. I'm echo everything that Miles has said about this book. Man, it is just something special. And I had heard good things about it, and I was like, oh, surely it can't be that good. But no, it's even better than what I expected it to be. Absolute Batman is absolutely delightful so far. So with that said, we are going to end today's episode. So let's talk about next week. Well, next week, oh, We're not going to talk about a comic book next week, but it will absolutely be something fantastic. I know I just made that pun, and I'm going to make it again, because next week is my birthday. And as a result, we are going to do a birthday challenge, and I'm going to take us through something that actually Miles is the one that pushed me to try. And I have fallen in love with and think every single day about it. It's a video game called Clair Obscur Expedition 33. It's available on PlayStation, Windows, and Xbox. It's actually part of Xbox Game Pass, which is how I played it. But yes, I have purchased a second copy because I'm going to play it again and do all of that over again one more time. It is a fantastic game. I'm not going to say anything about it right now because there's so much to say and a story that goes so many different places. And it's just one of the most special video game experiences I've ever had. So that's next week, Clair Obscur Expedition 33 for my birthday. So in the meantime, gang, if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode that we have done over these many, many years of doing the show. You can message us on social media at themoreyounerd on Blue Sky and other social media platforms. And you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. And now, oh, and of course, check out our sister show, Cosmic Crit, where we play Starfinder, the tabletop RPG game. It's like D&D in space and split out by the company Paizo, and it's awesome. And if you go to CosmicCrit.com, you can look at the upper right-hand corner and find a link to the Cosmic Crit Discord. There you can join and play your own tabletop RPG games, or you can just talk to me and Miles all day while we eat. So that's CosmicCrit.com. Check us out. And now, gang, we end the show, as we always do, with a rousing nerd out.
Too nerd for y'all.